Welcome to the Pain to Power podcast, where we have engaging, informed, and interesting conversations on topics including women's health, the menstrual cycle, chronic pain, trauma, the nervous system, relationships, and feminism. I'm Lisa Dion. I'm a women's health coach, facilitator, and educator, supporting you on your journey of healing, recovery, and moving into a place of personal power in your body and in your life. So hi everyone, and welcome to episode 38 of From Pain to Power. And today I have another very, very special guest with me. I have a woman called Shannon Curtis, who is a recording artist. And she reached out to me, it was about a month ago, I think, Shannon, at this stage, about my podcast and her work as a recording artist. And we're going to be talking all about music, but we're going to be talking about a lot more than music. We're going to be talking about Shannon's journey with her relationship with music, her recently launched album, which is called Good to Me, which was launched this week on December 2nd. And it is inspired by her journey of recovery and healing and her journey in a 12-step program. And it is inspired by 80s synthpop. Is that correctly pronounced, Shannon?
Oh, yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Synthpop music. Accessing power, showing up for yourself, serenity, healing, all those lovely things. Shannon is based in Washington State in the United States. So it is later for her. It's her very late evening and it's my morning here. So welcome, Shannon. It's so good to meet you. And would you like to say hi and introduce yourself a little bit to the listeners today?
Thank you. It's so good to meet you too, Lisa. Thank you so much for having me today. What more do I say that you've already that you haven't already said? I've been making music for a long time, and this album feels I've been making music for 25 years. Let's just get real about that. Like, it's been a long time since I've been doing this. This album feels like it has been something of a new journey for me, like a fresh start in some ways. And I'm excited to share it with the world. But my history briefly is that I was raised in California in the United States and spent most of my life there. Had, you know, planned to go to college and do academic type things earlier on in life, and music called me and I had to answer. And it was against the wishes of maybe my family at the time, or that I think a lot of people didn't really understand that I gave up the idea of, you know, a future in medical school and the track that I had been on. Music was really a calling that I could not ignore. And through a winding road of ways of pursuing that over the last 25 years, it has stayed with me and keeps calling me to new adventures, to new ways of stretching and growing myself. I think that's probably how a lot of artists feel about the art that they do, you know, that there's a continual calling and answering, and the answering, you know, is going to involve stretching and growth and being challenged and having to give up old things and, you know, release them in order to make way for new things. And it's an exciting thing. It's a parallel art making, music making is a parallel to just living a really like intentional life, I think, in a lot of ways, you know? And so I'm grateful that this is my life. I don't want to bore you with all of the gory details of my career or anything like that. That's the heart of me though, is that I'm a music maker, and my passion is to communicate ideas and tell stories that hopefully when folks listen, will give them an opportunity to connect in a deeper way to themselves and to with other people. That's sort of like my mission statement for what I do.
Oh, I love that, Shannon. That's gorgeous. Thank you. That's so, yeah, that's really, really well put. I was listening to Shannon's newly launched album this morning with my breakfast. and listened to it already. But I was listening to it again. I was preparing for this conversation, and just reading over your email again, and you know what you shared in the email. Actually, I'll just pull it up here. Some of the bits that you shared about some of the songs. So you know that song, which was the song I was listening to that I really liked. I think it was "The Silent Sea," learning to trust my inner truth. And, you know, that really, really stayed with me as I was listening to that, to that track, because it is a, like, as you say, you know, your whole life is now about music, your work is about music, and it's, you know, it's not easy, but it is this constant. And I suppose I relate to not so much the music side, but the living a creative life and bringing your creativity into your work. Mm-hmm. You know, in business, I see business, especially my line of business, is very much a creative journey, and there's so many twists and turns, and you have to really show up for, like, what is revealing itself to you, mm-hmm. and really listen, like you say, like the silency, learning to really trust and listen to what's coming out of you, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. A year ago at this time, this album didn't exist, this new record. And I've been on a journey over the last decade where I've been writing, recording, and releasing a new album every year for the last 10 years.
Wow.
And part of that was a necessity for business. We would make a record, go out on tour to share it with people, come home and do it all over again, because this is how we earn a living, right? The pandemic really threw a wrench into things and made it so we couldn't tour, but it did give me an opportunity to figure out some new ways it gave me an opportunity to reimagine how I do what I do in some ways, which has been really neat. But we have a community of supporters who support the work we do and who really helped us stay afloat during this non-touring time in the pandemic. And so I got to continue making new music for people in that time, which was just a beautiful thing. They really empowered me to be able to do that. But like I said, a year ago, this album didn't exist. And I was in a state of being where I knew I needed to write my next record, and I had no idea how I was going to do it because my reserves were completely tapped. I was in a state where I was just so stressed out about what is happening in the world. I mean, I don't know how much y'all follow in Ireland US politics, but like it's been very stressful to see the assault on democracy that's happening here, to see, you know, fundamental human rights being taken away from people in our country, to see this really just a rise of, you know, fascistic authoritarianism here, which, you know, we'd like to think it can never happen here, but it can. There's no rule that says it can't. And I'm sure, you know, other democracies that have fallen in the past didn't think it could happen there either. So this is really stressing me out. Other things stress me out too. Climate change. I feel like I was waking up to news about the changing climate every day and just feeling just helpless and worried, and just the fraying social fabric around all of this too. I was just very not in a place where I felt like I had any creativity to offer. And yet it was my job to show up and do that. And so, in a real parallel of my creative life and my life, like my spiritual life, I recognized that before I was going to be able to do any creative work, I was going to have to do some inner work. And somewhere in there, I'm not even sure where the inspiration came from, but the Serenity Prayer, which is a prayer that I picked up in my 12-step recovery, and it has become sort of a daily mantra in my life. It's called the Serenity Prayer. And yet I was not experiencing any serenity in my life. And even though it is a daily practice for me to touch that stone and, you know, to have recovery present in my life every day, I felt like I needed maybe a deeper house cleaning, so to speak, you know? And so I set myself on this journey to kind of like dig into the items, like principles of the Serenity Prayer in a deeper way, and set myself on sort of a journey of journaling, writing just for myself, and also choosing to see what kind of music I might write from that process as well. And so this entire album, this was born out of that personal work, taking sort of a step-by-step like journey through the ideas of the Serenity Prayer, the ideas of, you know, naming the things that I don't have the power to change, the courage to change the things I can, even identifying the things that I can change. Like you mentioned the song, The Silent Sea, it's just about listening to what it is that I need, right? As a way to start to figure out what it is that I can do. So That's a long explanation of connecting this idea that, you know, personal spiritual life and its intertwining with my creative life. This is the project that sort of emerged from the latest effort of all that.
Ooh, I'm getting a lot of goosebumps listening to you, Shannon. It's so good. It's just, I'm just like, don't say anything, let her talk. It's so good because I was just saying to Shannon before we got on the record, I'm also in 12-step. I'm in Al-Anon. Mm-hmm. Which for people who don't know is a recovery is a 12-step recovery program for people who've been impacted by other people's, usually alcoholism or addiction. And I've been there for about 5 years now. So I'm very familiar with what Shannon is talking about with the Serenity Prayer, et cetera. And I would encourage anyone who's interested, if you're feeling called, just you can find that on Google and mm-hmm. have a look. But there's just so much in there, isn't there? There is, you know, you touch on this piece around the intertwining of creativity and spirituality and then how that's then feeding into your, obviously your personal life and your work life, but we're also interconnected. You can't separate those things. And I think,
no.
You know, we can all relate to the climate change fear and then what's happening in different countries now and other countries as well in terms of politics and war, et cetera. And it's very scary, isn't it, Shannon? Mm-hmm. Because you can't control those things. I can't control those things. But what you have done is really recognize that you can control, or you can have an impact at least on your mental health, your state of your day, your joy, how you choose to engage in your recovery every day. And that's a really powerful thing, actually.
Oh, I think it is. And I think that I feel like I picked up a few just golden truths in the midst of this process of making this album and doing these exercises to write these songs. And one of them is, it's not an original idea by any means at all, but I care about being a part of the solution to the big problems that we're facing as humans on planet Earth. Like, I really do care about being a part of that. Like, I it's important to me to engage where I can engage to make a difference and to push, what do they say, that help bend that arc of justice a little bit closer to, you know, where we want it to be. I can't do any of that work. Obviously, the big work involves many, many millions of us all working toward that, right? Mm-hmm. But I can't really be an effective part of that work on a large scale or in my smaller community if I can't sustain the energy to participate. And I can't do that if I'm in a state of unrest and stress and just amped up anger and fear, I can't even be a productive activist.
No.
Right. Mm. And so one of these golden truths that I feel like I picked up in the middle of this process is I think it's maybe the work of healing ourselves on a daily basis. The work that we do to heal ourselves is maybe the first and like most fundamental step that any of us can take in helping to heal the world. Mm. Like that is really kind of where each of us can begin. And there are so many things that I will never in my lifetime see the resolution to. I hope that one day, you know, world peace, wouldn't that be great? Right. Like, but there are so many things, there are so many problems that I will never see resolved the way that I would like to see them resolved in the world. There will be pain, there will be suffering, there will be oppression, there will be all of these things that ought not be, but they are, right? And yet, I believe with this healing work that we have the ability, and not just the ability, but the right to live at peace in the midst of it and to live in our power in the midst of it as well. And like that is a really, that's where I want to be coming from. You know, it isn't excusing all the things that's going wrong. It's not turning a blind eye. It's an active participating role in wanting the world to be better and being part of making it better. But the first thing that I need to do to even sort of suit up for that work is to do this daily work of healing myself.
It's so powerful, isn't it? It's just so powerful because it kind of goes against, I think, our instincts as women, you know, to prioritize others first, right? Or minimizing our own self-care. etc., and our own healing, or thinking it's not going to make a difference, but it really does. And so have you, with where you're at now, Shannon, do you feel like, I don't know, obviously recovery is one day at a time. We both know that, right? Because like, yes. It just, it can, you know, one day you're feeling really powerful and then the next day, you know, you come into contact with something and then it just sort of goes out the window. But at least it's about knowing the journey back. That's the main thing, isn't it? So generally speaking, do you feel like you have landed in that in yourself? Like you've landed in your own agency around like exactly what you're saying, like prioritizing your own recovery and still like accepting that the truth, that there is another truth, a conflicting truth, that the world, that there are terrible things happening in the world, but you have the right to feel good in your body, feel good in your mind, you know, choose joy in your days, choose recovery, choose serenity, move towards serenity. Like you say, touching your stone, your prayer. How, what was it that helped you get there and what helps you stay there?
Yeah, great question. And I mean, on my good days, I'm there. Yeah. But like you said, it's a day, it's one day at a time. I mean, yesterday was a rough day. I'm going to not lie, you know, but that's the beauty of having a daily commitment is that every day is new and I get to start fresh. And I have these tools at my fingertips to pick up and use when I need them, want them, and they're there. This last year was really sort of a time for me to brush off those tools in a fresh way. I've been in recovery, 12-step recovery for 17 years. It'll be 18 years this coming year. And my program is in Codependence Anonymous. So I understand you loud and clear when you say how we as women tend to put other people first. That is sort of like the name of the game for a codependent. And it's interesting because I learned in my recovery that putting other people first is a sneaky way to actually manipulate situations to get what you need. At least that's my story. And really, so this last year has been an effort to really brush off those tools. I've been in the program for a long time, but I don't believe that I've really done this kind of a deep personal dive in a while. And so it was really helpful. And I wasn't reworking the steps in this particular year. I was examining the Serenity Prayer and using a lot of the principles from recovery in examining that. But, you know, I realized that for me, and I referenced this a moment ago in terms of how my putting other people first was really sort of a sneaky way to manipulate situations to get what I needed to fill the thing that was a void inside me, right? For me, it's affection, approval, and praise. That's what I needed so badly.
Okay.
But what I learned this last year is that a lot of the ways in which I had been not at peace with the state of the world, the ways in which I was living with so much worry and anger were my tendencies to try to wrest some kind of control over situations that I didn't have control over. You know, I felt so much anger toward the people who have taken us down these dark paths, for the people who've, you know, enabled leaders in our country, for instance, who should never be leadership, you know, and people that I know and love who supported candidates that just have no respect for human dignity or human rights at all. And I found myself just boiling with anger. And it came to the realization through this process that anger was just burning me up inside. And that anger, I think I honestly believed that if I stayed angry at these people enough, that somehow they would sense my anger and change their ways. I mean, it's silly to name it, but honestly, I think I was living with that belief or in the worry of things like climate change, you know, like just feeling this crushing weight of worry and constantly keeping that fear close. I think I felt like I was outsmarting the system. Like if I can just worry about it all the time, then I won't be surprised when the really bad stuff happens, right? Yeah. Like that I'm trying to control the environment in a way that I don't really have control over. And those two things, that fueling the anger and the keeping the worry close, were burning my spirit from the inside out and smothering it at the same time, right? Yeah. Like and I was not alive in any way. using these coping mechanisms that I grab onto so, you know, readily, but they weren't working. They don't work, you know?
They don't work. And it can take, like you say, years and years and years to, like, I know that took me years and I'm still seeing coping mechanisms. I was at a thing the weekend and I could see, oh my God, I'm controlling something in a sort of a backwards kind of a way to avoid feeling sad about something, right? And grief about something, because they're really uncomfortable feelings to be with.
Yes.
But there's like so much there in what you said, Shannon. Like, if we're sitting in that resentment, the bitterness, the anger, the fear, the worry, even on a biological level, like the listeners to this podcast, a lot of them have chronic pain and illness and that kind of thing. And even on that, like, sort of chemical, biochemical level, that's a lot of stress hormones in our body.
Yeah.
And it is going to contribute to inflammation and pain and discomfort. And even when we have a lot of stress in our body, it depletes certain nutrients and minerals from our, you know, like, for example, magnesium, which we all really need, you know. So it's just, so if you think about it from that point of view, it is very, very interconnected to all parts of us. Like, you're not able to show up for your creativity, you're not able to show up for yourself, you're tired, you might be in pain. And then, you know, next things leads on to the next thing, and it spirals out of control. It really, really does. And it's all coming from that illusion that we have control, you know, that we or that we can control actually what we're powerless over, which is the first step in 12 steps.
Yes, it is. There's a reason that comes first. And in the serenity prayer, you know, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change.
Yeah.
The things over which I do not have power. Mm. One of the exercises I set myself on in the writing of this album and the prep for that was to make a list, as exhaustive a list as I could, of all the things I do not have the power to change.
Wow.
And it was so illuminating. There were two categories of, like, two broad categories of things that I don't have the power to change. Some of them were very obvious, like, I can't change the weather. I can't change traffic. I can't change the economy. I can't change, you know, there's some, like, big broad things that, like, obviously I can't change the laws of physics, you know, like, they're just things that are, right? But there was a whole much bigger part of the list that were squishier items that are things I can't change, but that I think I fool myself into thinking I can. You know, the opinions of others, what other people think of me, what other people think in general, the actions of other people. It's a lot to do with other people.
Yeah. Other people's drinking. That's kind of how I ended up in Al-Anon. Yeah, exactly.
Other
people's behaviors and ways of relating, or, you know, you're right. It is to do with other people, for sure. Yeah. Whether that's an individual or a collective in terms of politics.
Right. Oh, exactly. Exactly.
Or family system.
100%. Yes. And so, you know, making that list was so illuminating, because of course I would never think that I could change, that I could go, you know, change the laws of time and space, and, like, you know, I can't go back in time. Can't, you know, can't change these. It would be silly to think I could change those things. So why do I spend so much time not believing that I can't change, that I can't change this other list of things, you know, that are, I'm equally powerless in. The really cool thing, though, is that, like, having that list gave me an opportunity to, in a very hands-on way, practice some radical acceptance around the things I can't change. And that was a really freeing experience for me. I gave myself the task of making a visualization of literally, like, letting go of those things that I cannot change. And kind of went through a process of visualizing every single thing on the list. And the experience that I had in doing that was an unburdening. I was able to open my hands and let go things that that don't belong to me. Right? And I felt in real time this wonderful thing that I now had a pair of open hands that were ready to receive the peace and the power that I so desperately craved. Like, the stuff I was hanging on to that was me beating my head against a wall and not getting anywhere was keeping me from receiving what I really wanted and needed. And it was an eye-opening moment for me. And, you know, you asked, do I feel like I've arrived or that I feel like I have the recovery? I mean, yes and no every day, right? That is an ongoing project. Like there are always going to be things in every day of my life that I'm like, okay, I'm tempted to hang on to this thing that's not mine to change.
Yeah.
And what am I keeping myself from experiencing by hanging on so tightly to that? What if I let it go? What goodness can come to me once that's out of my grasp?
Yeah. You know? Oh, it's, yeah. And the gifts in that are the peace and the serenity and the freedom. But the thing about those gifts is that there's a lot of uncertainty then, right?
And, oh, yes.
Which is a good thing, because I think that creativity needs uncertainty and space and openness.
Mm.
But obviously, uncertainty is probably the one thing that every human is trying to control and get away from, right? And so
it's
amazing.
It's vulnerable.
It's so vulnerable. It's so incredibly vulnerable because it leaves you vulnerable when you make decisions to leave a job or let go of, you know, small or big things you can't control on your lists, which, by the way, I'm encouraging everyone to do over their Christmas break, to make the list that Shannon spoke to there. It's a really, really great tool and thing to practice regularly, is to really examine things we can and can't control. And what's the last line? The wisdom to know the difference, you know, between what we can and can't control in the Serenity Prayer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's that it's the uncertainty. And I said, like, can we then be with uncertainty and spaciousness? Can we be with serenity? Can we be with peace? Can we be with a bit of quiet time? That is like retraining our training. Like my sponsor in my own 12-step recovery talks about the moss that grows back. And how if I, which regularly happens, like lose touch with my program or don't go to meetings or don't stay in touch with him, which, you know, happens, or I get busy or distracted, then that moss, the old thinking, the old training, the fears, the, you know, the wanting to control things, it's like a moss that kind of creeps back in.
Yes.
And so the important thing is, like you say, that it is just actually, it doesn't really even matter how long you've been on this journey for. It really is that one day at a time approach, and just knowing, like, having the tools available to you and making the choice to lean into them.
Absolutely. It is completely a daily choice. And I was going to say, the next list that I made, that I would, if you're going to encourage your listeners to make the first list, encourage them to make the second one too, because this is honestly where I feel like I was able to turn the corner in this last year of my own personal journey. I made a list of all the things I do have the power to change. An exhaustive list of what is at my fingertips to do. It was a cool list.
I'd say, like, I'm excited to hear.
It was really a cool list. I have the power to decide where I spend my time, where I give my attention, what relationships I invest in. My boundaries. I determine my yeses and my nos, and there's so much, right? The first thing I felt when I was done making that list was, this is awesome. And the second thing I felt was, this is scary, because what this list tells me is that I actually have a lot of power should I choose to use it. But the idea of actually using the power that I have, the power that was on that list, it was kind of like do or die time, right? Like I no longer, when I look at that list, I no longer can blame anybody else for my dissatisfaction with life or the lack of peace in my life or the feeling of disempowerment, because this list proves to me that I actually have access to create all those things for myself. So it was like, yay. And then, oh, crap. All at the same time. But I think that that's why in the Serenity Prayer, whoever wrote it, I wish I knew who did, the courage to change the things I can, right? Just because you know you can doesn't mean that you have like decided to do it scared. And you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, grant me the courage to do that, which was a whole other like leg of the journey. Okay, look, how am I gonna choose courage in this moment? You know, but these are all things that I'm so grateful to have gotten the chance to dig deeper in. They are a daily part of my life, different parts on different days. You know,
yeah, I love that, because you know, when we think of the word courage, an image of like a big giant sort of comes to mind in my head, at least, you know, and it has to be this big thing. But like a few weeks ago, I was talking to Orna Murray, who did the podcast about reclaiming our relationship with movement. And she said sometimes the courageous thing to do is just to put on your training shoes, your runners, we say in Ireland, your sneakers, you know, and or just go for the walk, or do the 20 minute yoga routine, or like you say, you know, sit down and do a meditation or read your recovery book or whatever it is that you need to do. And it is a courage. It comes in all shapes and sizes, doesn't it? It really, really does, depending on where you are. Like in my work, at least when I'm working with women who are struggling with chronic pain or menstrual problems, like the difference there is like the way I weave recovery concepts into that part in my life personally is that I don't have control over the medical system, right? Or misogyny and sexism generally at large, or how my pain is going to be. I actually don't have control over the outcome of my hormones, but I can choose things. I can choose to, like you say, set boundaries and to reduce stress as much as I can in my life and to eat healthily and get exercise. But those things don't guarantee always results either. Right. And that's really painful because, you know, I've had to go on this journey of like realizing that I was using all of these self-care tools in a way to control an outcome. I was trying I was trying to force my body to be healed and fixed because the medical system was letting me down. So I was like, well, I'm going to, you know, change my diet and do all this, you know, healing and recovery. And then I will like, you know, get to the Holy Grail. Which I never did, at least my thought, that version of the Holy Grail that I thought it was. But now it's like, I can only do what I can. And then I have to let go of, I have to really surrender the outcome. I don't know how I'm going to feel when my period comes, or when, if I have an endometriosis flare, whatever your chronic pain condition is, you know. And I know there's listeners here who have other autoimmune issues as well. And it's scary because a lot of the self-help world and recovery world, they kind of convince you that, oh, if you do this, this, and this, you'll, you know, reverse all of your problems, and it's just the reality, right? So it really is about staying present, staying connected, having supports, learning to sort of know where your boundaries are with that stuff, you know, with the world at large, when to say no to things, when to, you know, and even hope can be a vulnerable thing too, because it can be false hope, etc. Sorry, I'm kind of going off on a big tangent here.
No, it's the most vulnerable thing, I think, actually. But I'm really like hearing what you're saying about we can't control the outcomes as much as we put our best selves into trying, you know, and hoping for the outcomes that we want. I think that that is, for better or worse, just sort of like we're never going to be able to control all the outcomes of everything around us in our lives or even in our own bodies, like you say, right? And so is it possible, though, to live in my internal life at peace and to live in my power, even if the outward circumstances haven't resolved the way that I would like them to?
Yeah.
Is that possible? I think it is. Like, I do believe that it is. And I know that it's true from my own experience, but I can also see it in other people's lives. Like I can look throughout history and see people who have lived in much more horrible circumstances than I could ever imagine for my own life. And I read their writing and I can see that they were living at peace in their own spirits. And they were living, standing firmly in their own power, even when the circumstances that they were trying to battle against, the outcomes weren't happening the way that they would have liked to have seen them in their own lifetimes.
Yeah.
Right. And it's that living in that tension constantly between preserving our peace, preserving our power in the midst of stuff happening in us and around us that is unsatisfactory.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is that inner power, isn't it, Shannon? You know, and it's like, I talk about being ruthless around your own power, and well, particularly in 12 steps, like being ruthless around my serenity in that you have to be, well, I feel I have to be, speak for myself, I have to be quite ruthless sometimes in terms of what I engage with, what I choose to ignore. If I'm reading the news, for example, and if I feel pressure to have to know everything that's going on with a particular crisis in the world.
Right.
Like sometimes I'm just not, I just don't have the headspace for that. And yeah. I have to be, or setting a boundary with someone or saying no to something that, you mm-hmm. know, will bring up guilt for me. Like mm-hmm. I'm not going to be immune to that.
Right.
So learning how to really look after yourself, or even in my work, is, you know, always like choices, like having choices to, I can always go back to the doctor. I can always, you know, take hormones and medications, et cetera, mm-hmm. if I so choose to. I'm never going to just stick to one mm-hmm. route, you know? So it's like, and that's what I love about this one day at a time approach, is that we don't have to put so much pressure on ourselves to mm-hmm. be a certain way or commit to a certain path of recovery forever. You know, there's always right. going to be twists and turns and choices in whatever way we choose to live and look after ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of my journey this past year, this anecdote came to mind as you were talking. I happened to just see, I think I saw a tweet that somebody had made referring to an interview that Trevor Noah did with Jay Shetty. Trevor Noah is the host of Daily Show program. I'm not sure if you guys watched
I know, that. Yeah. And Jay Shetty, he has a podcast as well, does he? Or he does loads of self-help stuff and on social media.
And I don't know him. I don't know much about him, mm. but this person was tweeting about it. And so I went and watched this interview that he had with Trevor Noah. And he was talking about how he trained to be a monk at some point in his life. He mm-hmm. went to India and he was doing monk training. And on this one particular like day, they had this, they were taking like a 17 hour long train journey in India. And I'm not sure what for, but this was the journey. And when you are, you know, in the monastic life, you purchase the least expensive ticket. You know, you're detaching from, you know, material things. And so it's not about pursuing comfort. It's about, you know, detaching from comfort and that kind of thing. So they had tickets in the most crowded, hot, noisy train car that you can get on the train. And so he was saying how at every stop on the train trip, he would get off the train and find a quiet place at the station to meditate. Mm. And then he'd get back on the train and they would resume their trip. And at one point his teacher stopped him and he asked him, "So why do you get off the train, you know, to meditate?" And he explained why. And the teacher's response was, "Do you think life is like the stops, or is life like the train?" And I'm like, oh, shoot. Life is the train. Like, I do need a vacation every once in a while, but it's not realistic to the idea of checking out.
It's,
you know, from all of it. Like, we do have the ability to find our serenity on the train. Right. And, you know, I want to be on the train anyway. Like, the train's moving forward. The train's where progress is happening. Like, that's where I want to be anyway. So my job is to figure out every day how to reconnect to my sense of peace and power on the train.
On the train. It's so humbling, that, isn't it? I love that. It's just, yeah, because we can feel this pressure to, like you say, take the vacation several times a year. It's just not realistic, or go and be the monk on the mountain. But you're right. Like, I, practically speaking, I am very sensitive to noise, and I live in, well, Dublin isn't really loud, but where I live, sometimes there can be a lot of noise transfer between apartments, etc. So it's just a practical thing that bothers mm-hmm. me sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I've had to learn to, you know, be in that and be in at peace in myself. What does that look like for you, Shannon, practically speaking? How do you support yourself with being on the train and connecting to your peace?
I think what I've learned for myself this last year is it's really important for me to commit to myself personal time every day. Like, I have a much more peaceful and grounded day when I start my day doing body movement and having that time for myself. There are things that I like to listen to that allow me to sort of get out of my own head and listen to other people's thoughts and ideas as I'm stretching and moving and walking. And, you know, I'm a self-employed person. I make music, you know, and so, like, there's this pressure to work all the time. And there's this pressure to get started, you know, on the work first thing and go all day long. And I've learned that I really need to set a boundary with myself to be like, nope, first thing, this is what I need to do to take care of myself today. Staying connected with sleep, like making sure that I get enough sleep is so vital to me. So like, honestly, they're just rudimentary things that on a daily basis are the foundation of me being able to stay connected to myself in the way that I want to. Mm-hmm. And then the other major part of my life is that I'm partners in my creative and business life with the person I'm married to as well. So we are on top of each other 24 hours a day. And it's wonderful. He's the best partner ever, ever for me and my husband, Jamie. And, you know, staying on top of whatever's happening between us, making sure we keep short accounts with one another. Don't ever let a resentment build. Mm-hmm. You know, like if I've said something sharp and I didn't mean it to be sharp and I've recognized it, I just need to go and make an amends as soon as possible.
Yeah.
You know, like that's what I mean by keeping short accounts. Like we really work really hard at doing that. And of course I can only do my part in that. He's got to do his own part for his side of the street. But that's a really foundational part, I think, of keeping me centered too, is making sure that I am staying on top of that relationship in my life, which is, you know, one of my primary relationships.
Oh, so important. And our relationships really do determine our well-being, I believe, anyway, you know, because they're they're such a big part of who we are and who we are as people. And, you know, that I know that making amends is one of the steps as well in recovery and learning how to do that. And it's so good that you do that for you and for your serenity and peace and your part in that relationship, you know.
That's all it is for.
Yeah.
I mean, it does benefit, or it can benefit the other person, but my motivation, I know, always must be because this is what is good for my spirit.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I do it first and foremost.
Yeah. So Shannon, let's talk a little bit more about your record, Good to Me.
Okay.
So yeah, because we've talked about some, I know we've weaved it into the conversation.
For sure.
But yeah, like, would you maybe introduce it a little bit to the listeners and share a little bit about what's in the album?
Sure. So I've talked a lot about this journey that I was on this last year and digging more deeply into ideas found in the Serenity Prayer. And so the album is a concept album about reconnecting to my own peace and power in hard times via these ideas. So the first song on the record is kind of a thesis statement. It's called Take It If You Want It, which is sort of the idea that this peace that I want, this power that I need in my life is available to me. It is mine by birthright of being a human on this planet. And it's mine to take hold of. There's nobody keeping me from it. And so it was just sort of like a thesis statement to get into the work. The next song talks about just naming the issues that were really, that were keeping me up at night, the stuff that I felt was robbing me of my peace, looking them square in the face, naming the monster under the bed and facing it. The third song talks about those coping mechanisms that I talked about earlier that were failing me, the anger and the fear. The song is called From the Inside Out, and it's examining the ways in which I understand that those coping mechanisms aren't serving me. The fourth step is about powerlessness. It's called Little Soldier, and it's a tale of going into a war over and over again that I know I can't win, and what that does to my spirit. It's just an exploration of what that sort of like, when I'm unwilling to let go of the things that I don't have the power to control, what that does to my spirit, you know.
And that one really, like, I really relate to that message in that one, because I was thinking about that over the weekend, about how we could, like I said about the moss, you know, we can get sucked back into people, places and dynamics or things we can't control, the world at large, and that we do have to just keep on, we have to kind of go through that cycle several times to realize, oh shit, I need some help here. I need to do things a different way.
I expect I'll probably be going through that cycle until the day I die.
Yes.
Like, I don't think that I'll ever be baked. You know what I mean? Like, this is, and that's okay. That's okay. It is perfectly all right. There's a song about acceptance. It's called Be With What Is.
That's the fifth
one.
Yeah.
That's kind of like the beating heart of all of this. You know, when push comes to shove, that when I have not been able to choose acceptance, that's when I'm not living in the best place. Like I'm not, my spirit is weighed down and not free in the kinds of ways that it can be when I'm refusing to accept what is. That was an interesting piece for me to write. I think that I had maybe a misconception about the idea of acceptance, or I have had a misconception that by accepting, we are necessarily maybe like giving tacit approval in some way. Mm-hmm. And I did some reading about just different thinkers who were talking about radical acceptance in the process of writing that song, and realized that no, it's an acceptance without judgment. It's an acceptance without, it's not saying everything's cool.
Yeah.
It's just an acknowledgement of what reality is.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
And I think that I was resistant to the idea of acceptance for a while because I thought, well, no, that's like me saying it's all right. These things that are wrong, you know? And it's not that. It's just it is an acknowledgement of what is real.
Yeah. I love that, Shannon. That's really powerful because I remember, are you familiar with Richard Rohr?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, very little, but tell me more.
I don't know a lot about him. I know that he is a Franciscan priest and he, mm-hmm, but anyway, mm-hmm, the reason I fell into his work was because he writes a lot. He writes a lot about, mm-hmm, spirituality, and I read a lot of books about spirituality, mm-hmm, and he has written a lot on 12 steps. And mm-hmm, anyway, he had this one quote that really stayed with me, which was, and I, you know, in the 12 step program, we use the word God, but that can be the God of your understanding. So it doesn't have to be, yes, a religious God. But, mm-hmm, or can be your relationship with your spirituality. But he says, when you come into relationship with reality, that's where you meet your God.
Mm. Yeah.
Right. And I was like, yeah, oh shit. Yeah. I've been doing this wrong. I've been looking for God everywhere else. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. And then I could see like exactly what you're saying. It's this acceptance of reality, which can be really, really hard. But I think that has allowed for me to be more of who I am, which is human.
Yes. Oh yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. The next song on the list was about courage. We talked about that a little bit earlier. Mm. It's a song called Sweat and Butterflies. Mm. Like I was imagining like when you have to do something with courage and it's scary as shit. You know, I get sweaty palms and butterflies in my tummy. But it's that moment of recognizing, like, remember that we were talking about the list of the things I do have the power to change, right? Mm. And how scary looking at that list was. I kind of imagined it being like if you're on either side of a narrow canyon. Or have you ever seen the old Indiana Jones movie?
Yes.
Where his the steps appear, right? But imagine like there's like that kind of a canyon, right? And you've got to leap over. Everything you want in your life, everything that you want to go after is on the opposite ledge. And below you in this pit is potential failure, rejection, criticism, changed relationships, you know, all the things that may change when you make that leap. Courage is the choice to make the leap over all that, those possibilities that may happen to get to all the good stuff on the other side. Mm. Right. And so that song is just kind of a monument to the idea of courage, and to doing all those things. You mentioned the song, The Silent Sea, earlier, which is probably one of my secret favorite ones on the record, because when I got to that stage of things, I was like, okay, so I have, you know, courage to change the things I can. Let's go. Let's do it. Now what? Like, what exactly is that, right? And so this was the idea that, like, if I can just, you know, circle back to what I'm feeling about what's happening in my life, what's happening in the world, that those feelings are actually very powerful messengers. They're like ships coming in on a silent sea, telling me what I need. And telling me what it is that I need to pursue in my life. Mm. And so it's just a song about listening.
Well, deep listening. A deep listening
to, because I really do think that we get trained out of trusting ourselves, mm-hmm, the way that we are brought up in our respective cultures, you know.
It's true. It's kind of like a gaslighting that we do that happens to us, and then we do that to ourselves. That's how I see
it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like an internalized gaslighting. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. But I do think that we know what it is that we need, mm-hmm, in that deep kind of listening. And so The Silent Sea talks about that. And the last couple songs, there's a song called I Am, which is kind of a spoken word piece on the album that is just an affirmation of all of the ways in which I figured out that I actually do have a lot more power in my life than I had led myself to believe. Precisely because I have the power to listen and know myself. And in knowing myself, knowing who I am, what my values are, what my choices are, it's incredibly powerful to know those things about oneself.
Yeah.
And the really cool thing that I learned in exploring that those ideas is that when I know that I'm loving myself in the kind of way that I can stand in my own power, my own self-knowledge, I discovered that when I look around, I recognize when other people are doing that for themselves too. Mm. Like I can see that in others.
Yeah.
And like, we can build power together like that. You know what I mean? Like that's where we connect. That's where we're like, okay, girl, you're standing in your power. I'm standing in mine. You love yourself. I love me too. Let's go change some shit. You know?
Okay. So I'm getting very excited like, here to speak to this because she's speaking my language.
You know, yeah. And so the album wraps up with a song about staying on the train called Serenity. Mm. And then the last song, these songs were written in order. I didn't know what was coming next at each step of the way.
Oh, wow.
The last song. Yeah. Yeah, no, this was just in real time. I wrote and recorded each one of them over the course of the first 6 months of this year. But the last song was sort of it became the title track of the song, Good to Me. Mm. It was just, I wanted to make a commitment to myself at the end of this journey that these are the things that I know that I can do, that I have access to doing for myself on a daily basis to reconnect to myself. There isn't anybody else who can ever do that work for me but me. Mm. The first line of that song is, there isn't any savior on the way. Mm. There's nobody that's going to come in on the, you know, shining armor and like fix things for us or for me. Mm. But that's the best news, really, when you think about it, because it keeps me from waiting around for someone else to fix the stuff that I feel like needs fixing. And it reminds me that the work will always be mine to show up for myself, to be good to myself. That's always, always ever going to be up to me and nobody else. Even the people who love me the most. My husband loves me so much, right? Mm. And I know that if he could, he would swoop in and do the things that make me feel connected to my peace and my power. He can't do it for me. Only I can do that for me. Mm. And so it was just a commitment at the end, just sort of like a solemn vow to myself, like, hey, Shannon, I'm going to be good to you.
Mm. Oh, Shannon, it's been so inspiring to listen to you. And to me, by the way, listeners, this is the first time I get to meet Shannon. So I'm
Likewise, this is so fun.
Yeah, it's so fun. And I'm relating so much to this and I'm feeling so deeply touched. And I know you spoke about recovery journey being for you and why would that even matter? But really what we've come on in this conversation is this journey of, at least for me, realizing that we only have the power to change ourselves, but when we do that and when we do that daily or as much as we can to the best of our ability, I do think it has a ripple effect. You know, like we're speaking to a lot of people on this podcast listening to this who are showing up for recovery in different shapes and sizes, in different ways, in different ways, you know, suffering is impacting their lives or their bodies. And I know that as well. For myself, like the way I do recovery is going to be different to the way you do recovery and other people. And then, you know, our creativity is so different and how we show up in the world. And like we do then touch our, like I see things as everything is systemic and interconnected, which I'm sure you do too. And like when I go to my family at Christmas, because I'm practicing as much as I can, like recovery, it's just a healing stone or it's a healing energy to bring into a family system or into a group or into a space or into an environment. So whatever it is that you're doing, it does, even though it mightn't feel like it, like, or it, we mightn't see the results immediately, it does have an impact in, you know, where you go and how you show up in the world and the people around you and your family and your relationships and your work and your creativity. It's so, it's invisible, but it's just so powerful, isn't it? That. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, when we, when we heal ourselves, that affects every relation, every person that we're in touch with in one way. And there are going to be some people, and there have been some people in my own recovery who didn't like the change in me, you know, because the old, like, unhealthy way was working better for them, you know, and they weren't ready for a healing journey. So this was like ripping fabric in some ways that, you know, that was being torn in two from the old ways that were enmeshed, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
even in those circumstances, the ways in which we heal ourselves does ripple out.
Yeah.
And it does, I think that it's a way we can kind of like hold the door open for others who want, when they're ready to make that journey for themselves in their own way too, you know?
Yeah. It's so, like, cause I am so grateful for all of the, like, when I go to my own meetings, and cause I go to a very, like, what I would describe as a meeting where there's a lot of people who have really strong recovery. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't even have to say anything. I just sit there and listen to people. And it's just like, I literally just absorb it into my bones every week, you know, and I hear it. And when I stay in touch with those people between meetings and stay in touch with my sponsor, et cetera, and, you know, the literature, it's just, I benefit so much from those people who've been on that path and listen to how they engage with the steps and recovery and their own way of being in their relationship with spirituality and creativity and healing. Mm-hmm. It's not about someone needing to tell me what to do, actually. It's really about being inspired. Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time I came into an understanding of what the God of my understanding was in a meeting, like you just described. I came from a very conservative religious background growing up, and I learned some of my codependency in that system for sure. And so I was not into the idea of G-O-D, capital G-O-D, you know, and I really had to wrestle with the concept of a higher power in my recovery. But I can remember the meeting where it happened, and it was sitting in a circle listening to those people who had good recovery, like you just described, telling their stories and feeling this movement. It's feeling the ripples we were just talking about, right? The work they had done in their lives was rippling out and touching mine. I'm like, oh, shoot. This is the higher power. This is the power greater than me.
Yeah.
It's that's it.
Yeah. It's the group. It's their recovery. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And so I think what you're describing when you talk about those ripples is you're talking about a power greater than any of ourselves that we're contributing to and with one another. We're all making this all the time. We are creating this universe with every breath of our being, every moment of every day.
Yeah.
And the energy we put out really does matter. It really does make a difference in other people's lives.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
One last question for you, Shannon, if that's okay.
Of course. I mean, I'll stay all night. I love enjoying talking to you so much.
I know. I'm already planning the next episode I'm like writing it in my diary. When can I ask Shannon to come on again in the new year? It's going to be great.
Oh, I would love it.
In terms of your career, because there's a lot of people who listen to my podcast who are creatives, you know, and in various ways, whether it's business or art, you know, how, like, maybe share a little bit about what inspires you to stay connected to creativity and the creative process, and how you support yourself in that.
Staying connected.
That's a big question.
It's a big question. I'm one of those people that is blessed/cursed with like overthinking things all the time. and so I've really kind of got this constant chatter going on in my brain/spirit about trying to make sense of the world, making connections between ideas and stories and my experience and wanting to communicate those things. It's not hard for me to stay connected because it's just kind of there. That said, it is still a discipline to like actually sit down and write music, right? There is, I have to choose that part of it. I can have ideas all day long and that's not actually creating anything. That's the, you know, that's the spark or whatever, but the choosing to do it. I think that one of the things that honestly has kept me most connected to the work, the actual work part of the creative work, is being in relationship with my community. I have this amazing community of people who support the work that I do, all, from all over the world. And quite literally at the onset of the pandemic, they began supporting in a monthly financial way to keep me going, to do what I do. Kind of like a micro patronage sort of system, because we couldn't tour any longer. And so it really, you know, made things pretty precarious for a while. But I have, even before then, you know, knowing that I was going to go out on tour and be, you know, in the presence of these people to share music, they sort of like counted on me to bring, you know, to bring what I bring to the table, you know, on a regular basis. I feel like I kind of have a responsibility to show up for them, you know, like they've put me to, you know, to, they've said, hey, Shannon, I actually really value what you do. And I, here I am supporting you. And so it is a, it's sort of an accountability, really. Like I feel like I have an accountability to my community to continue to show up for this work. And so that's probably one of the biggest motivators for me to actually, you know, to sit down and do the work, part of the creative work, you know.
That's
really helpful. That answer your question?
It does. No, it's really helpful. And I can relate to that as well in my own work for sure.
Because I
do work some work with some people who are doing creative processes, and you know, there's one lady I'm thinking of in particular, and she's fantastic. I think we can all relate to this, that we're great at the ideas part and, you know, all of the juicy goodness, but then sitting down to actually do the action piece is kind of the scary part. So that's, it's really interesting to hear how, the, you know, your community and staying in relationship and your responsibility and your accountability and your loyalty towards your community is what helps keep that going. And I'm sure that, you know, we can open up a whole other conversation there. Maybe we can chat about that again, about the creative process, but you know, because it'll bring up things around perfectionism and taking action and all of the things.
100%. Also, I just released an album on Friday, right? Today we're recording, this is Tuesday, your day, Tuesday, my Monday night, my night. It's a, it, it's a day of celebration, right? I have finished this long project. It is out in the world. Yay, yay, yay. What's the feeling I have the very next day? Totally depressed, completely hit a brick wall. All the feelings of vulnerability. Like someone described it to me as being kind of like a postpartum depression in some ways, like giving, after you give birth, you know, to something like this. But like all the vulnerability of like having put the thing out into the world and like, well, how's it going to be received? Will it reach as many ears and hearts as I want it to? Is it good enough? Like all the, and all the questions and all the stuff that, like, honestly, one big piece that I failed to mention in staying connected and going back for more of that experience over and over and over again is the recovery piece. Like I, when I'm feeling those vulnerable feelings and I'm feeling the big crash after the big release, you know, those are the moments I dig right back into those tool, the recovery tools. And like, okay, you know, what here is true? What is not true? What is mine to control? And what is not mine to, you know, what is not in my power? You know, it's really kind of going back to basics. So the recovery piece is absolutely tied into staying connected to the creative piece as well.
Yeah. And looking after yourself. That's so inspiring. I'm going to like really try to remember that. You know, one of the things, like yourself, for me is the movement piece in the mornings and going for walks and getting my morning light. Yeah, I can really relate to when you release something, launch something into the world, and then you get that anti-climax New Year's Day feeling sometimes, you know, and you're like, what? I thought everything was supposed to be sparkly forever, and it's just not.
Right. And I mean, it's agonizing enough that you are almost, I'm almost like, okay, I'm just hanging this up and never doing this again. But no, I need to work through that and come back.
I know one of my friends who recently had her second child, she said to me, she's like, I don't know what happened. I think I got amnesia after my first kid. Like, well, I don't know what.
It's funny. Probably the same thing happens to us, to the, people who are putting creative things.
When you're, because it is, you're birthing something, you're giving something life, and it's just the delusion that it's going to be all the answer then to our problems. But it just, it makes the problems, like, it doesn't make them go away. It just, there's just more of them. It's just a different quality of them. But it's just, you know, having your toolkit, having recovery, having supports is the main thing, isn't it? And leaning into those. And like you say, with your first album, what was the name of the song again? Sorry, your first song on the album?
Take It If You Want It.
Take It If You Want It. Always coming back to that is like you have the choice every day to lean into what it is that you need to do.
Isn't it a blessing to be faced with that choice every day?
That was fun. Personal responsibility. It's a bit of a, it's tough, but it's also, it's a blessing. It is a blessing, but it does require courage. And sometimes that's really, really small, small little steps we can do. Mm-hmm. So Shannon, thank you so much for joining us on this episode. It's been so inspiring listening to you, and I'm already really excited that we've connected, and I'm looking forward to staying in touch with you. Where can my listeners find your work, find your album, everything? Tell us everything.
Oh, okay, great. Well, if you are a Spotify listener, it's there. I encourage you to go listen on Spotify. It's everywhere you stream music. So if you search for my name, Shannon Curtis, and any of the services, you'll find it. The album is called Good to Me. Please connect with me on socials too. If y'all are on Instagram, I have to say I'm in the process of exiting Twitter because I'm not sure I can support a platform that's being run the way that is and welcoming the kinds of hate speech type things that are happening there. But
yeah,
Instagram, and I'm still on Facebook as well too. So if y'all want to connect, I would love to do that.
Absolutely. I'll make sure to link everything that she has just shared in the show notes. So you can just click on the show notes of the episode and make sure to listen to her music, Good to Me. And yeah, let us know how you get on. You can send me an email, lisa@lisadeyoungcoaching.com, or you can message Shannon yourself over on Instagram. Yeah. I'm sure too, or on Facebook. And that's it from us. Have a lovely rest of your week, and I'll see you next week. Bye, everyone. Thank you for joining today's conversation. This community, these topics, and the stories I share are not possible without all of you being part of the journey. If you are interested in getting more support for your own personal process, head on over to my website, lisadeyoungcoaching.com, to book a consultation call with me. Or you can sign up for a free course there as well. And as always, please like, subscribe, and share this podcast with your friends. Lots of love for the week, and see you next time.